New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the SiteShed. My name's Matt Jones, and this, believe it or not, is episode 50. That's right, episode 50. You know what? I knew we'd get here eventually. It's amazing how fast time flies when you're meeting cool people and, you know, building a show like we're doing. You know, we get so much great feedback from you guys out there, and we've had so many awesome guests on the show, and I just want to say thanks to, I suppose, you guys as our listeners. If you weren't sharing your earbuds with us and leaving cool reviews and giving us the feedback that you do give, then none of this would be possible, so thank you. And I also want to say thank you very much to all our collaborators. So we've had some amazing guests on the show from all over the place, and they really add a lot of value to the show, and they also add a lot of value to you guys, and that's the reason you keep coming back. So yeah, this is just the beginning, I suppose. Episode 50, you know, what's next? Who knows where it'll end up? But yeah, look, as long as you guys are all enjoying it, as long as I'm still enjoying it, and as long as our collaborators are enjoying it, then everyone's happy. So we're just going to keep on striving forward and doing the best we can. So once again, if you're enjoying it, then please go ahead and leave us some reviews. Many of you have, and many of you still do, so thank you very much for that. Much appreciated. So with that in mind, we may as well dive right into this episode. I remember one of the most heartbreaking moments when I was back plumbing. We were doing a sewer replacement job, and there was this beautiful big jacaranda down on the north shore of Sydney, and this thing was massive. It would have been four stories high, beautiful. All the leaves were in bloom. It was this beautiful ocean of, you know, these mauve leaves. And unfortunately, the tree roots had totally destroyed the sewer system. And as a result, the tree was to come down. I don't know how old this tree would have been. My guess would be probably in the vicinity of 60, 70 years old. And so we had to get the arborists out, or the tree surgeons. And they reduced this beautiful old massive tree down to literally a stump within the space of, it must have been no more than 2 hours. And I was just sitting there just thinking, oh my God, what have I done? I've killed this beautiful tree. The reason I tell you that story is because today's guest has actually put a very unique spin on, you know, that kind of potential outcome. So Nick from Tree Incarnation is an arborist. They reduce trees. So they go out there and they bring trees down, chop trees down. However, instead of taking that timber that they've taken down and throwing it out or reducing it to mulch or firewood or whatever, they actually turn it into furniture. Now, this is a really, really cool product, because what it's basically doing is giving that tree a second life. And as Nick alludes to in the show, you know, some of the owners or people, property owners that own that tree, you know, they get really attached to it. And when they have to, you know, when he gives them the ultimatum, well, look, it's either the tree or your house, you know, it's a hard thing to, it's a hard pill to swallow. However, when Nick can say to them, look, we've got to get rid of the tree, but we can actually turn this tree into some furniture so you, it'll be with you forever, then it kind of makes things a little bit more digestible for them. So this is a really cool podcast with the guy who's got a really cool product and a really amazing drive to make a difference. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And if you do enjoy it, please leave us some messages. And also make sure you head across to the links in the show notes where you can get in touch with Nick and his team, or give him a follow on social media. His Facebook page is Tree Incarnation, TREENCARNATION. And it's the same on Instagram, tree_incarnation_co. Anyway, the links will be in the show notes. So anyway, guys, enjoy the podcast and let's dive right in.
Giving tradies and contractors around the globe the tools to run a modern business. You're listening to Toolbox Talks from the SiteShed. Now here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hello once again, listeners, and welcome back to Toolbox Talks. Today, I am joined by a gentleman who has taken it upon himself to put a bit of an environmental twist on a, I suppose, an industry that is considerably wasteful in some regards when it comes to their byproduct of their service. Nick Pearden is from treeincarnation.com.au and he is located down in Melbourne. And Nick's got a bit of a cool product that I actually got introduced to by a friend of mine who lives down in Melbourne. And it straight away jumped out at me because, as many of you know, I'm a bit of a hippie when it comes to environmental solutions. And I think this is really cool what Nick's doing in this space. So the reason I'm putting this podcast together with Nick is because I like the idea that, you know, you can do a little bit above and beyond maybe what you're doing day to day within your business, and you can do it in a way that can A, add value to your company, and B, add value and make an impact on the environment. So Nick, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
No, you're welcome. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Mate, I am absolutely pumped to be talking to you because this is such a cool product that you've got. Now, my friend Scott, or our friend Scott, I suppose, posted a link to one of your videos on Facebook, and I just rang him straight away. I said, mate, put me in contact with this guy because this is awesome. So, yeah, mate, worlds colliding. And do you want to tell the audience just a little bit about Tree Incarnation, or a little bit about, I suppose, your background?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, we're Melbourne's only tree company that makes furniture out of the trees that are being cut down. We might even be the only one in the country, but it's yet to be confirmed. So for those that are listening that aren't familiar with the way things are currently done in the industry, basically, when there's a tree that's doing structural damage to the house, or it's dead or dying, or has to be removed, basically, it's just typically cut up for firewood and mulch, and destroyed. Whereas, you know, what we're really trying to achieve is that, you know, forests that are currently being cut down aren't just furniture. You know, we believe that the more furniture that we make from trees that are already been cut down are, you know, we're going to decrease demand for deforestation and habitat destruction.
I love that.
Thanks, buddy.
Such a cool idea. So, I mean, we're going to dive a little bit, I suppose, more into the background, but I mean, I suppose I want to know why. I mean, are you a hippie? Like, what's the go? Why did you start doing this?
Look, if I'm honest, I've sung Kumbaya a couple of times, and I wouldn't call myself a hippie, right? I guess I've just always been a big advocate for change. And, you know, if I've got an issue with the world, I'm not going to keep it to myself, yeah? So I guess what's fueling me, or I guess the reason behind doing what we do is it's really not, I mean, it is environmentally focused, but it's more about, you know, pushing civilization forward and changing the industry. So, definitely, because we are doing something that's great for the environment, that's a big, motivator. But, it's more about being the change that we hope to see in the world.
That's awesome, man. All right. So tell me, like, what did you want to be when you were growing up?
What did I want to be when I was growing up? When looking back, I just wanted to grow up really quick. Yeah, I mean, I reflect on my peers at the time, and you know, they were playing Pokemon, and they were like on the Nintendo, and I'm not saying I was as well, but I was ready. Like, maybe I wasn't ready, but I just wanted to grow up quick. I wanted to be something, and I wanted to help people, and I wanted to help the world. But you know, being a 10-year-old or however old I was, wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to be. So I knew I wanted to be something, but I wasn't exactly sure what. I just wanted to help people and help the world.
Nice. And so your profession, are you an arborist?
Yeah, that's right.
And can you explain to the listeners, for those that aren't familiar, what an arborist is?
Sure. So an arborist is one who has an understanding of tree biology. And arborists are generally people who meet sort of halfway between the needs of the customer and halfway between the needs of the tree. So typically we get called, yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, you know, people just give us a call and they say, oh, you know, I want to get a tree pruned, it's blocking my gutters, or it's, you know, I've got a neighboring tree, you know, my neighbor has a tree in the yard and it's, you know, coming over to my property and I just want to cut it in half. Now, for those who aren't arborists and for those who don't understand much about trees, cutting trees in half is really not good for them. So we do as much as we can with the trees, and what we really try and do is try and solve the problem by, not doing irreversible damage to the trees at the same time.
Yeah, fantastic. So I am actually originally a plumber, and we used to do a lot of drain replacements and things like that. And I remember, you know, whenever we had to do a big dig up, or if we were digging around a a sewer line, stormwater line, whatever it was, we would have to have an arborist on site present who would basically be looking over our shoulder and making sure that we don't do you know, too much damage to the root system. And he would teach us how, you know, instruct us on how to cut it, how, where to cut it, if it can be cut, if it can't be cut, all that kind of stuff. So that's basically you, right?
Yeah. It would surprise you how many times we get a call from a client who says, oh, my tree's not looking well. And then we come and inspect the tree, and then, you know, the plumber or a landscaper or what have you has been in the month before and cut all the roots. And pretty much done irreversible damage to the tree. So we get that quite often. The number of trees that we do would probably surprise you.
Yeah, so I guess as there'd be a lot of plumbers out there that dislike arborists, but then I suppose on the same note, there'd be a lot of people out there that absolutely do like you guys, because, I mean, as painful it is to be told you can't cut certain roots when you're trying to lay a drain, it's also pretty pretty soul-destroying when you look back at a tree that's been killed because of a root you cut. So it's a bit of a chicken or the egg scenario.
It's a funny industry because there are extremists out there. There are arborists that literally hold the opinion that the houses should be destroyed and the trees kept. I kid you not, like that doesn't make much sense at all. I mean, yeah, and at the end of the day, when it does come time for a tree to be removed, it's cut up for firewood or, you know, disposed of as mulch. So, yeah, if they had an awareness around what we do and the difference that we're making, I'm sure they'd be on board pretty quick.
Tell me about your transition into becoming an arborist.
Yeah, sure. Well, I grew up on a farm and I was always a bit of an outdoors kid, and I kind of fluked a job. Well, I didn't fluke a job, but I guess I landed in a job by accident, working for a company here in Melbourne, doing exactly what I'm doing now. Well, mind you, apart from the furniture. So they were just a pretty stock standard tree company. They had a great reputation. And, everyone was pretty much qualified arborist. So I remember starting there with zero experience. I didn't even know what an arborist was, mind you.
You wouldn't be alone. I imagine there's a lot of listeners out there that are sort of, until we explain that, they probably wouldn't have known either. It's not that common.
Yeah, true. It wouldn't surprise me, yeah. Funny, when I'm out at a club and I meet a girl, I just tell her that I'm a surgeon because it's a common thing to be called a tree surgeon.
Right, yeah.
anyway, and then I don't elaborate any further. But anyway, my first week working in the industry, literally by the end of the week, I knew it's exactly what I wanted to do. I was there for a number of months and then went overseas, came back and started up my own business, yeah.
Nice. And so that was my next question. Tell me about your transition into your current business. Well, is that what happened? You just came back and thought, I want to work for myself?
Yeah, sure. Well, at the time, I was doing a few cashiers on the weekends, like mowing lawns and things like that. I'm a very independent person. Yeah, I like doing my own thing, kind of singing my own song. And I get doing my own thing. So I was I already had a little bit of business experience behind me. Once I'd returned back from overseas, initially I started looking for work in the industry. I was looking for contract work, looking for, you know, even just labouring work within the industry just so I could develop my skills. I couldn't find any work and, I kind of just said yes and worked out how. I called up an old man, a very reluctant investor, my dad, asked for $40,000 to buy my first truck, and he accepted. And I went out on my own with very little experience in the industry. And looking back, it wasn't the wisest decision, but it wasn't the wisest decision at the time. But it got me to where I am now. So yeah, I'm pretty grateful.
What would you have done differently?
If I knew what I knew now back then, I would probably get a little bit more experience under me. Work for a few other companies. I'm a big advocate for working for even bad companies because then you work out what not to do, for instance. So, you know, there's no harm in just sort of moving around because I was only familiar with that one company, yeah? So, yeah, I probably would have worked for maybe three or four companies and then, gone out more.
Yep. No, I can certainly relate to that. So tell us, I suppose, like, what's the... Obviously, you've touched on, you know, the furniture side of your business. Can you just elaborate a little bit more on that unique, I suppose, area of what you guys do?
Totally, yeah. Well, one of the things that really didn't surprise us when we did a customer survey one time, the survey revealed that our customer base had a really strong emotional attachment to the tree. So they felt really guilty about getting the trees cut down when it, you know, came time to do so. I mean, you know, I often found myself justifying to the customer, you know, the removal of the tree. I'm like, well, are you going to get rid of the tree or get rid of the house? So it was often a bit of a buyer's resistance, I guess you could say, with the customers. And, you know, from that, once I worked out that people, you know, felt bad about the whole process, I was like, well, you know, we should build off this. We should find a way which we can enable people to feel better about the process. And then, you know, I sort of tied that in with the less waste, and I tied that, you know, with the furniture. And I guess a lot of the problems in which we were facing at the time, well, we've now solved because we utilize a lot of timber, and people feel really good that, yeah, we're actually upcycling the timber rather than destroying it.
So are you when you take this, or when you, you know, bring a tree down, do you give is the timber going back to the customer, to the person you that own the tree, or what are you doing? Are you selling it in a store, or how does it work?
Sometimes, yeah, if they request it to, by all means, we do give them a bit of a discount, seeing that they did technically supply the materials. But yeah. Look, there is still a portion of the amount of work that we do where the customer, you know, there's only so many coffee tables that you can have in your house, yeah? There's a portion of the work that we do where we take everything away, and then we've got our other channels in which we sell the furniture.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so that's through what, like stores and stuff, is it? Or
yeah, online, collaborating with like homeware stores, yep, who like have hundreds of thousands of followers on like Instagram, things like that. So yeah, wholesale, online, and back to the people who initially cut the tree down for.
Yeah, nice. And so tell me, do you guys have a pretty strong presence on Instagram and social media?
Yeah, for how long we've been doing it, like I really can't complain. I mean, it's, yeah, we could always do with more if you want to give us a shout out, if that's what you're saying. No, I'm kidding.
You wouldn't get many hits from my Instagram.
What's that?
You wouldn't get too many hits from my Instagram, that's for sure.
Oh, if you've got any more than 2,500 followers, which I'm sure is more than likely, would appreciate a shout out, because that's a lot more, you know, we've only got like two or whatever it is. Anyway, that's tongue in cheek, of course.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so I mean, where did it start? I mean, what sort of products did you produce initially?
Originally, we started with our Lucas mill. For those not familiar, basically a Lucas mill enables one to convert pretty much any sized tree trunk into post boards, beams, or slabs. Now, predominantly, at the time when we started doing it, we were milling trees and we weren't making stools. Now, the problem with that is, at the time, the timber was green, obviously, because we're cutting down green trees, and it had to be dried out in about, you know, couldn't really be dried out in any less than 12 months unless we were to utilize a kiln, yeah? So the really cool thing since going out, you know, and doing things against the grain, no pun intended, is coming up with this idea to make stools. Now, the cool thing about these stools is that there's no joinery in them. So our turnaround time is literally, like, it could be a week or it could be a couple of days if we wanted to. So if it cracks and splits because it's green timber, it's not going to affect the functionality of the site. So that's, yeah, probably our biggest breakthrough, which at the time, geez, if we started doing that, geez, we would be so ahead of the game now. But, yeah, there's a lot of friction at the start, but as soon as we came up with this idea to make stools, yeah, it's pretty much been downhill ever since.
So I'm looking at the website now, and some of the stools, there's a photo there with the various stools that you've created, and they look awesome. Are they solid pieces of timber?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Wow.
Bend your knees when you lift them.
No kidding, right?
Yeah, they're bloody heavy.
And so is it, do you sort of make these stools kind of on a lathe setup, or is that effectively what it is?
Yeah, so I've just got a big lathe in which we turn these lumps of timber on and make these stools, that's right. Yeah.
That's awesome. And you do that out of a workshop or something, do you?
Yeah, just a workshop, just a little warehouse.
That's so cool. So you basically you cut the tree when you're cutting the tree down, you're cutting it into sizes that you can use, is that right? And then you basically stick it in the truck, take it back and work it.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, we don't dismantle trees the same as what other companies do. I mean, because you know, yeah, so we can't exactly work with small pieces here. So
yeah,
sometimes we have to utilize cranes and all sorts to get the lumber out in one piece, or you know, the manageable pieces in which we can upcycle. It's funny, we'll work in on a job about a month ago, and a tree company drove past as we were pulling out like these tape measures to cut up this small trunk and then, you know, making it into stools. And they were sort of looking at it like, what the hell are those arborists doing with tape measures? And like, you know, because I mean, you know, initially you just cut it up into manageable pieces, into, you know, whatever, you wouldn't need to measure it at all. But, you know, we cut it up into, you know, 500 mil long, you know, because any less we can't really use it. So yeah, definitely, yeah, get some odd looks from a few trades here and there.
Have you had any really cool like product requests or anything at this stage, or has it just basically been stools?
Definitely, yeah. We were recently approached by a student at Melbourne Girls Grammar. I think this, yeah, it's Melbourne Girls here in Melbourne, obviously. Basically, this student, this really, really cool student, she's 13, an absolute inspiration. She's come up with this idea to have an outdoor, classroom, yeah, an outdoor educational classroom, in which she's given us the brief to design all the furniture for this outdoor classroom used from reclaimed materials. And obviously we've got pretty much an endless supply because we're cutting down trees pretty much every day. So we've been, yeah, briefed on this job to make this outdoor setting. It's sort of one in which has sparked interest from a number of other private schools as well. So I'm really hoping that we get this job to do for Melbourne Girls, because, you know, it's going to
good case study
to enable us to minimise waste to do it for a number of other schools as well.
That's awesome. And so will the school be funding that?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's awesome. So are you out there cutting down the trees? Like, what do you do day to day? What's your role in your business?
I'm on the tools from time to time. I spend a lot of my time trying to, I guess, delegate and dilute as much of my involvement in the business. Mm-hmm. So the more I can spend my time on much more, I guess, more important tasks in the business, the quicker we can fulfill our vision and the bigger difference that we can make, really. So I do really enjoy being on the tools, but, you know, at the end of the day, we're not going to make a massive difference if I'm the one cutting up the trees and turning the furniture and selling the product at the end. So, I try and delegate as much as I can, but, yeah, you know, it's a bit of a juggle because I really enjoy it as well.
How big's the team?
What's that? How big's the crane?
Your team.
Oh, sorry.
And your crane.
I did, yeah, because I briefly spoke about a crane before. It's 4.5 tonnes.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. There's about half a dozen of us.
Okay. And they are just a combination of arborists and labourers.
So it's predominantly not the arborists who make the furniture. So
yeah,
we've got a team of people who dismantle the trees and operate what would, I guess, you'd call a stock standard tree company. Mm-hmm. And then I have a few other guys who make the furniture.
Okay. And they're sort of more from a furniture making background, are they?
Yeah, predominantly. And also milling and the kiln drying specialists. Also, stacking. So, yeah, a number of different qualifications there.
Have you noticed, have you had any, I suppose, hiccups or bottlenecks within the business? I mean, if you could fix any one thing in your business right now, what would it be?
That's a really good question. Well, on the other side of the coin, I mean, anything that's given to you and anything that you haven't worked for, it's really unlikely for you to value that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, sort of, I do see challenge and I see hurdles and I guess problems within the business as being like the, you know, obstacles, not obstacles, but stepping stones to, you know, become the best version of yourself and to become the person that can solve those sort of problems on a regular basis. So at the end of the day, I kind of looking at it as though peeling a prawn, you know. If you peel a prawn, it's going to taste a lot better if somebody else peeled it for you.
I imagine when you made that segue from going from, you know, reducing trees into producing furniture, there would have been some obstacles there in the space of different procedures, different ways of doing things, bringing on new staff, training people, all those kind of things. Did you have any issues in that regard?
Yeah, definitely. And the way I initially anticipated it to be, I thought it would be the arborist who would be cutting the tree and then salvaging the timber and then milling it and then making the furniture. And it was, I don't know how I came up with that idea, but like to find an arborist who is, for one, qualified, competent, who can operate a Lucas mill. Like, you know, there's so many cogs in the wheel. So I just found specialists in their field, and you know, got them to brought on people who resonate with the vision and what we're trying to achieve, and you know, given them a particular area for them to shine, and you know, given them those responsibilities. So yeah, if I could go back and start again, I definitely would have implemented that first.
Yeah, and what about? So what do you do when you're not working? Make furniture.
Well, I suppose technically sleep isn't working. So, I work like in inverted commas, like I work, end quotes, pretty much 24/7. Like Saturday, Sunday, like I don't need to be reminded to do what I do. I don't need to be motivated. I just do it because, I'm just inspired from within to do it. So, all the time. I'm never not working really.
The joys of having your own business.
Yeah, well, I mean, for those listening, you probably think, geez, man, does he like go out or anything? Because I do, but I probably do like an average 100-hour work week, but it doesn't really feel like it.
Yeah, I read a quote recently from Mark Zuckerberg, and I'm paraphrasing this, so forgive me if I completely get it wrong, but it was something along the lines of somebody asked him, you know, Mark, how many hours a week do you work? And he replied, well, I suppose it depends on what you clarify as working. He says, I'm technically in the office, I suppose, 60 hours a week. However, I'm working 24/7 because I'm always thinking about ways I can improve, ways I can add value to the Facebook community and the planet. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think I saw that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I got that wrong, but that was,
kind of ironic. Yeah. You being an entrepreneur as well, I'm sure you can relate like that.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? I mean, just because you're not sitting in front of the computer doesn't mean you're not working. I mean, I find some of the most productive time in my day is in the morning when I walk down to the beach, get a coffee and just try and clear my head and think about stuff. I find I get more done then from a creative point of view than I could ever do sitting in my office.
Yeah, well, it's an incredible awareness to have. I mean, each to their own. I mean, I think the worst thing you can do is sort of look at somebody else and copy what they do because it works for them. I mean, you've really got to be sort of congruent and aware with what works for you. So,
yeah, well, that's actually a pretty good point. Yeah, well said. So what's the best advice you've ever been given?
It's a very easy question for me to answer because I'm very, I guess, in tune with the best advice. Well, and in this day and age, I mean, I feel it's only getting worse as well. Like people... they feel as though their opinions matter and people feel as though they can just impose their opinions on other people without permission. And one time this really switched on entrepreneur said to me, and it's kind of ironic, he said, only take advice from people who have the result that you are seeking in that current field. Mm-hmm. So I take business advice from Richard Branson. I take business advice from Elon Musk. But I do not take marriage advice from Richard Branson and I do not take marriage advice from Elon Musk because it's been divorced a number of times, So I think it's really important when receiving advice or going out and seeking advice or somebody's opinion, you ask them two questions. You ask, who are you and what have you done? If they have the results that you're seeking in that field, well, you should be all ears.
That's funny. You know, that's the same. It's the same thing that I regurgitate. Basically, be careful who you listen to. And I actually even use that analogy. You wouldn't take marriage advice from someone who's divorced.
Totally. Yeah.
How funny. Oh, cool. So, I suppose if you were talking to, say, an upcoming business owner, what would be some advice that you may be able to give them based off your experience in, you know, running a business and growing a business, starting a business?
What advice would I give to somebody starting their own business? I definitely surround myself with people, going through similar things. Anyone pursuing an unfulfilled dream. Not only that, in my experience, ever since, I guess, business boomed, I mean, I'm not really qualified to say that business has boomed because we've got a team of six, but ever since we noticed big change within that business, it's as soon as we had a vision. So anyone looking to take things up or anything looking to bring more meaning into their lives or anyone who wants to, I guess, have a lifestyle that they don't need a holiday from, I would suggest they collectively collectively identify an issue that you and your team collectively have with the world, and then you would build your business around that. So you'd make your business the catalyst for that change. So as I explained before, you know, the forests are currently being cut down and harvested furniture, yet domestic trees that have already been cut down typically disposed of as firewood and mulch. So one issue that we have with the world is exactly that. So, you know, the more furniture that we make, the less demand there will be for deforestation and habitat destruction. One other issue that we have with the world is businesses not differentiating themselves. So we hope to inspire others so that they can live a more meaningful life. So, yeah, 100%. I would definitely recommend people to not go with the grain. Excuse all these puns, they're not intentional. To not go with the grain of other businesses. I just feel 99% of businesses out there are just doing it all wrong. They're just profits orientated rather than being the change that they hope to see in the world. And arguably, I mean, in my experience, if you are a vision-based business, more money will come. And, you know, the money should not be the end goal or the primary goal, yeah? It should be the change that you hope to see in the world, because ultimately that will bring more money. But the last time I checked, you know, I can't pay my staff in coffee tables or stool or tree services. So, yeah, need to make money, but it shouldn't be the primary aim.
Yeah, no, I definitely resonate with that. I mean, it's one of the things we try and teach all of our clients too. I mean, you know, obviously we have a, you know, a web design company, and we work specifically with trade-based organizations to help them grow their online presence. But one of the things we say to them is, you know, it's try and niche yourself, like find something that you can differentiate you from the rest of your market. And it's something that you've done really well because there's no one else doing it. But it's sometimes hard. It's a hard paradigm to accept sometimes when you've got to try and tell someone that, you know, they're casting their net too broad. They've really got to reel it in a bit and try and focus on something.
Yeah, totally. And it can be really hard being in your business because the majority of business owners believe that they are different. But from the consumer's point of view, you know, I hate to say this, but a lot of them look the same. Even though the business owners don't hold that same opinion. So yeah. I think it's about knowing your customer really well and also collectively sharing that issue with your customers as well. So if they have a similar issue with you and you know, your staff, you know, build a business around that. That's what I say.
Do you listen to any, are you listening to any good podcasts, reading any good books or anything like that at the moment?
I'm a big follower of Jack Gelosa.
Yep.
From The Entourage. He's a big inspiration of mine and, yeah, any chance I guess I can get to tune into any of his Ask Jack D podcasts or episodes, I really listen quite attentively.
I know Jack very well. Actually, I was one of the early SNS members.
Oh, is that right? You were signed up to the Entourage quite early, did you?
A long time ago.
Is that when their mentors were on your board? Is that kind of how it worked back then?
On the what, sorry?
Yeah, did they have the advisors on your board? Is that kind of... From my understanding, that's kind of how it worked, like in the early days.
Not quite, but yeah, it was a lot smaller than it is now. That's for sure. But it's
probably with Richard Bell and Bowie and Grant and things.
Yeah, it's been.
I'm told those are the days.
Yeah, it's been good to watch that journey. But anyway, so what's the best thing you've ever done to find new customers?
Great question.
Could be podcasting. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, I've never done that. Yeah, I'm open to it. Perhaps I should start. Early on, one of the smartest things I did was to look where our competitors were advertising and to sort of observe what they weren't doing. So very early on, we set up strategic partnerships with complementary businesses.
Beautiful.
So, for instance, a lot of our customers are homeowners. So, you know, they've got gardens, they've got big backyards typically, and they might have a pool. So we've targeted pool cleaning companies and also garden nurseries. What else? We've targeted possum control companies, even solar companies and things like that. And we've just set up a win-win between us and the customer. Now, the reason why I did this is because, one, we'd be seen as the authority in the industry. Number two, none of our competitors were really utilizing this. So basically, to give you an example of one of the partnerships we have with a garden nursery, basically approached them and I led with what I could offer. So I said, you know, I locked up and I said, look, are you guys looking for more customers? I mean, what business owner is going to say no to that? And they said, yeah, sure. I said, look, we can recommend you to our database if you let us display a little brochure at your cash register. So once they agreed, we set up the brochure at the cash register, and then we set up a win-win between us and the customer. So we gave a $50 gift voucher to their customer. So for every one of their customers who employed us, gave them a $50 gift voucher to the nursery. The nursery got to monetize their customer base, and then we got work that we wouldn't have done originally. So yeah, and the best thing about that is there's no outlay. So utilize that, business boomed, and then The second thing I would recommend is to have a really compelling vision and authentic.
How did you track it?
Typically, people would tell us up front. They would call us, and the first thing they would say, oh, I picked up your brochure at such and such store. So rarely did we have to ask, but, I keep track of where all our leads come from anyway. So,
yeah,
not only that, conversion rates, like 90% plus, like, and not competing on price, and people are just, they trust you because you're leveraging off somebody else's brand. I mean, at that point, we were established for 2 years. I think it was maybe three, and we were leveraging off companies who had been established for 30, 40, sometimes 50 years.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's genius. I mean, we've pretty much grown the same way, to be honest. We grew through a strategic alliance, and it's been fantastic. I recommend it to anyone, any business out there, just to get creative in that space because there's so many opportunities. You've just got to go looking for them.
Yeah, it's so smart. And I'm a big advocate of getting a little bit ninja, a little bit creative as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you ever have to, I suppose being in an industry where you kind of, you don't really have a whole lot of competition, do you come up with the whole price argument very often or not so much?
Initially we did, yeah. But I mean, now that we have a compelling vision and like an authentic, genuine vision and now that we're making furniture out of the trees, like people are just
more responsive.
Yeah, and there's less buyer's resistance because we understand our customers so well. People are just like, these guys can just solve my problem. And we do. So I think it really comes back to how well you know your customers. So, have a compelling vision. That's definitely what I would say. And, know your customers better than they know themselves.
Have you got any tips on, maybe how to get better conversions from customers or, how to win work?
Yeah, I would definitely track what works and what doesn't. So I can tell you now that if I generate a lead online, chances are I'll convert it between 60 and 65%. If I generate a lead through a strategic partnership, 90% plus conversion rate. So I just track what does and doesn't work. And I keep trying. I keep trying new things. I think as soon as you start becoming complacent with how your business is run, the competitors are just going to take over. And that's just, I believe it. I just wrote a mediocrity.
And so tell me, we've got a bit of a technical spin, I suppose. Well, we like to talk a bit about technical tools and, apps and all that kind of stuff. Do you guys use any apps or project management or job management or anything out there to help run your day better?
Yeah, probably don't have a lot to say in this field, but we use Invoice2Go.
Yeah.
We use ServiceMate.
Yeah.
It's service and then M, the number 8.
Yeah.
For what we do, it's kind of a silver and an easy head of it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So what about, I suppose, referral strategies or techniques? Do you implement anything like that on that front?
Embarrassingly, no, because takes about 30 years plus for a tree to grow and need to get cut down.
But what about for the furniture side of the business?
Yeah, not even so. I mean, we've been doing the furniture side of things for about 9 months now, so we're not too developed with referral strategies on that end.
Yeah.
But I'm a big believer in it coming back to your vision. I mean, people really buy into what we do and why we do it. Like, it's a really cool concept and people want to be a part of it. Like, we've had people wanting to volunteer and people are, advocates of what we do. So I believe that if you have a genuine why and a genuine vision and a compelling vision, people will talk about you and journalists will want to write about you. So I think it's more than referral strategies. I think it comes back to what you do and why you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. And so I suppose in your opinion, what's the number one thing that you did to differentiate yourself? I mean, apart from setting up this side of a business, was there a bit of a paradigm, I suppose, in the business mindset or was there like a turning point or a penny drop moment that sort of, led you down a different path?
Yes, definitely one strategy that I implemented was putting information on your website that does genuinely solve people's problems. So one thing that we identified pretty early on is that people need tree removal permits,
Mm-hmm.
So I put all the information up on our website and I had a page for every different council, just spelling it out for our customers, the rules and regulations for each individual, the council, So after a couple of months, Google got onto us and they recognized that our content made a lot more sense than the actual council's content. So we ranked, I kid you not, like, our rankings for those particular pages, it ranks better than the council's website. And since, you know, I've made videos, educating people on, you know, if they do or don't require a permit, blah, blah, blah. And, people call us up and they think we're the council. It's really quite bizarre. They call us up because we've got the council's logo on there and, like, we're educating them and, like, we just solve all their problems and we're not even selling to them. So I think in this day and age, people have got a really in tune and switched on bullshit meter. So if you're like, yeah, we're fully insured, fully qualified, enough free quotes, like, you know, in this day and age, no one, like, you know, that gets you a seat at the table, but yeah, it's not good enough. You've got to educate your customers prior to them buying into you. So yeah, that was a big penny drop for me. And since implementing that, we've done videos pretty much on every single a council permit regulation, kind of a thingy for every page. And it works really well for us.
Yeah, I must admit, that's one thing that we try and communicate to people, well, as regular as we can. You know, you shouldn't try and be out there trying to sell to people, you know, from the get-go. You've really got to get in that space, get in that educational space, start adding value to them. You know, be giving them something that's helping you build trust and rapport with that person.
Totally, yeah.
Once you've got a bit of a track record with them from, you know, from doing that, then it makes it a lot easier for them and for you to promote a product or sell something purely on the basis that the people are more familiar with you. And like you said before, their bullshit meter may not be, or their resistance meter may not be as high as it was when they first ran into you.
Yeah, totally. And also maybe a little bit of personality. I think a lot of businesses these days are lacking a bit of a human element to it. It's all about saying the right things and, putting on this mask and this salesy voice and, like, fuck that shit. Just, you know, be yourself and just say it how it is. In our case, you know, if you treat staff, we're going to recommend cutting it down, yeah? So, just be genuine, be yourself, and just be there for the customer and just solve the problem. That's what I'm, a big advocate of.
Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. And you know what? It's one of the reasons why we don't do a lot of editing in the podcast as well, because we just, like, we sort of...
I love that.
When mistakes happen, you know, it kind of makes it more real. So, you know, it doesn't need to be polished all the time, basically.
Yeah, totally. And no doubt, I'm assuming that's probably, produced pretty good results for you, no doubt.
Yeah, well, I suppose the good thing about, you know, running a podcast is you can kind of run it the way you want. You don't really have anyone telling you what to do. So, I mean, obviously, you know, our listeners like it. Well, according to downloads and statistics, they do anyway. So I guess that, you know, being truthful and speaking just the way I normally would to you if we were down at the pub having a beer, that kind of, you know, building that kind of rapport with you builds that kind of rapport with the audience. And I think most people appreciate that. Like, it's not fake. Like,
rock on. That's cool.
The way we talk now is the way we would be talking, you know, if we weren't in front of a microphone as well. So
yeah, totally. Totally.
So, look, we're getting to the end of this now, and I've just got a few more questions. I suppose I wanted to ask you, what does the future hold? What does the future hold for Nick? What does the future hold for Tree Incarnation?
Both very similar things for me, like work. I believe I work for the day I die just because I get so much enjoyment out of it. No doubt I'll take holidays things, but work.
Yeah.
So as soon as I can dilute my involvement from the business, and as soon as I can, I guess, put in a business development manager who can grow the business for me. There's a mate of mine up in Sydney who he does very similar things to what we do now. So he takes logs from other tree companies and then makes it into furniture. So he's technically not a tree company. But one thing that's really cool about what he does is that people get him in to build a house using the materials on the site, particularly, you know, predominantly the timber, yeah? So he comes in, he gets the tree companies, cut down all the trees and take away the foliage and leave the logs behind. And then he comes in with his milling equipment and makes as much of the house out of the timber from that same site, yeah?
Hmm.
So the cool thing about this is that it's all portable equipment. So we can travel the country and make a documentary and make, you know, homes for the homeless and things and get it sponsored by the big bank or, you know, whatever. So that's definitely what I'm looking forward to. And the cool thing about that is that these aren't exactly log cabins. Like, these are multi-million-dollar projects. So I'm sort of dreaming to do a similar thing to Grand Designs, except, make it a bit of a charity, make a documentary out of it, and, share a vision with the team who are involved to make the houses using the materials on that same site, yeah.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I imagine you would need a lot of trees to make a house.
Yeah, well, Yeah, I suppose there are some really, really big trees in the way of
some really big houses too.
You know, houses are looking to go. So, yeah, I'm happy to be wrong, but I reckon, yeah, you might be surprised at how much timber you can yield from one log. But anyway, watch the documentary in a couple of years, you'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. No, looking forward to that one. And so how can people, second last question, how can people reach out to you?
Sure. Best way would probably just to check us out on Facebook. If you resonate with what we're doing, just give us a like. We're at Tree Incarnation. And on Instagram, we're at treeincarnation_co.
Cool. I'll put some links to that in the show notes so people can find you if they need to. And of course, we'll tag you in these when they go out across the social media and social media mediums also. And so the last question that I would like to ask you is, who would you like to see interviewed on the show next?
Jackie D, if he hasn't been already.
Jackie D.
has he been interviewed yet?
No, he hasn't, actually.
Have you pitched to him? Or he'd do it for sure.
I haven't. I mean, we sort of tried, I suppose, trade-related businesses typically. But, yeah, maybe I could. I'll flick him the email.
Yeah, no harm. If you get him on the show, man, I'll be all ears. I'll definitely
do. All right, awesome. Well, Nick, thank you very much for your time. Mate, I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy man, and I just want to say on behalf of myself and the listeners, you know, what you're doing out there is fantastic, and it's put such a unique spin on a bit of an age-old, wasteful industry there. So good on you, mate. Keep up the good work in that regard.
Oh, legend, mate. Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
And mate, we look forward to seeing your progress and maybe getting you back on the show, maybe a little bit down the track, and we can see how things have progressed for you.
Hopefully, yeah. Fingers crossed.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much. We will chat later. And audience, that is a wrap. So if you haven't already, head across to thesiteshed.com and register for our Toolbox Talks, where you'll be regularly sent great episodes just like this straight to your inbox, so you'll never miss one. If you want to join the community, you can head across to thesiteshed.com/members, where for a small monthly fee, you'll get access to regularly updated training material, as well as access to our forum, where you can mingle and collaborate with trade-based business owners just like you from all over the world. If you're enjoying this podcast, please head across to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We greatly appreciate it, and it helps us spread the word and reach the masses. Likewise, if you know anyone that might benefit from the content we create, then please go ahead and share this with them.
You've been listening to Toolbox Talks by The Site Shed. For more great content just like this, head across to thesiteshed.com and join the amazing community of savvy trade-based business owners.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Please, if you did, head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Anyway, if you are a project-based trade business and you work in solar or bathroom renovations or kitchen renovations or roofing or something along those lines, and you would like to see some of the results that we've been showcasing in our marketing on for your business, thousands of percent return on ad spend, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 13,000% return on ad spend, please head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. That's tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. It will be well worth the conversation, and I can't wait to chat with you. Ciao.